What I want to try and discuss in detail is what, because we talked a lot about your work as an organizer, and when you were a business agent, what you like to do the most is organize.
Yeah.
But each union seems to have a business agent doing different things. Can you describe in detail what is a business agent you do?
If I remember all of it. Well, the business agent, first place you have to see that everybody joins the union. And the law says 30 days, so before it used to be 15 days, but then the law changed, so we have to give them 30 days to join the union. If we send them to work, of course, we sign them up, but if they got the job by themselves or somebody brought them in, we have to see that everybody joined the union.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have to see that they work the regular hours, that they get paid time and a half for overtime, that they, if they have a worker less than a month, they won't fire an old one and keep the new one. And also, the garment industry is a little different than other industries because after 1 month, there's no seniority. See, after 1 month in the shop, you're as old as the one that's been there 20 years.
You know, so the union has no... It has no way to protect longer?
No, we were going to do it in cheap lingerie because that's one of the things they were asking. But the shop never signed up, so we was left hanging. But
why was there never a seniority?
Because it's a seasonal work. So you work a few months and then the season ends and then the new season starts. And so that's one of the reasons.
But there were never attempts, for instance, to negotiate a contract where, when the season began again, the same workers would be put back on in the shop.
Well, that was understood. I mean, they didn't even look for other jobs. And then when Social Security came and they collected unemployment, so they collected until the shop was open. Or if they wanted to quit, we even had a clause in the agreement that the worker has to give the employer 5 days' notice if they're going to quit. Which very seldom they do, you know, and the employer is supposed to do the same thing, but then we immediately jump and we say, no, why should you fire them? Because we always are supposed to be on the side of the worker.
Mm-hmm.
And we go to the impartial, we have an impartial chairman. If we couldn't settle it among ourselves,
in other words, between you and the employer,
then we go to an impartial chairman.
And
the impartial, we have one, first it was Anthony O'Rourke, and he lasted for years, and he died. And I have somebody else now, but I forgot his name right this minute. The employer, they agree on and they both pay him. They pay half of his wages, each one. And he's supposed to be impartial. And the same thing with settling prices. Like somebody is making a garment and the boss wants to pay so much, the workers want so much. And then I go in and I try to settle it with the workers and the boss. And if I can't settle it, we can't get near an agreement, then we take it to the impartial chairman. And then he settles the garment, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Or if somebody, they lay off somebody, they don't fire them, they lay them off, they keep them out longer than somebody else, then we go to the employer, if we know about it, and tell him, why didn't you call so-and-so back? Or you hire somebody new when one of the old ones is out.
Mm-hmm.
And this are the things. And all kinds of, they even fight, when they fight, they call the union. I just got at least half a dozen calls in my life, calling me that the one girl wants the window open and the other girl wants it closed, and they couldn't tell me the argument that would call the union.
So who would call you would be like...
We have a chair lady. We call a chair lady, a chairman, because it's man or woman. And it didn't matter what craft they were, either presser, operator, or special machine, doesn't matter. Just so the one that was in the union. And see that everybody's in the union, see that everybody gets paid for the holidays. At the beginning, when we tried to make the union really strong, and I think the communists had an awful lot to do in that, is divide the work as equally as possible. Which in some cases it wasn't fair, because if I'm very slow and you're very fast, so they give you 10 dresses and they give me 10, and maybe it takes me a whole week to make them, you might make them in one day. Well, you have to go home. But when they were really nice, and this supposedly the communists have started or they took credit for, is that they said, why not be a good sister? And instead of going home, why don't you help the other one that had the 10 dresses that's slow and make, you know, all together and finish the work and go home. And I wasn't a communist, but I thought that was a good idea, you know, to help each other. But you can force people, if they don't want to, they don't. So, then we have to see that they got their vacation pay, because, you know, they get the, they used to get two vacation pays. I think they get one a year, I don't know. Then they have to belong, after they work so long in the shop, they get the Blue Cross. So we have to see that they sign up for it, because that's for their benefit. But if the chalet or the shop doesn't do it, you have to do it, the business agent. Then we have a meeting, try to have one every month. In the union.
Mm-hmm.
And explain that all the new laws or something is coming up, or elections, even that. And lately, the last years, we got kind of very politically minded, and we were always, as far as I remember, we were always Democrats, and we were always trying to, you know, speak for the Democrats. And we have candidates come and speak at the meetings and make collections, and this is supposed to be voluntary. I mean, they say that they force you. They don't force you to, but they do ask. I mean, will you give some money for somebody's election? And so they do, or they don't, whatever it is. And
would you go into every shop on a regular basis? Well,
if I didn't have any other business, nobody called me for anything. And there's always something going on, you know, but some charities don't bother, and they don't get paid. So that they lose time when they do that. But we have to, this system, due sheet. We take the due sheet in the shop with the names of the workers, and they have to deduct the dues, then mail it to the union. And with the excuse sometimes that I have to take the due sheet, I go into the shop and see if they have new faces, because sometimes they have new people that maybe they're over 30 days and they didn't sign up with the union. And then they gave me complaints, and some employers are kind of tough, you know, and they don't want you to interrupt them while they're working. And I usually try to make it so they let me talk to the workers, and I go, hello, how are you, how's things, and, you know, and how you doing? And then they say, oh, you start complaining. And then I say, well, come, we have a meeting, we'll talk about it at the union. Or
you wouldn't, in other words, you never handled it right on the shop.
No, only when it came to prices, we had our committee, and we went to the office and talked to the employer with the committee and the chair lady about prices.
The price committee was a shop committee?
Yeah, the shop, and they would elect them at the meeting. They would elect three or five girls, you know, and then they would, the others would tell them what they think it's worth, and they'd go. Or something else came up in the shop that, for instance, some shops wanted 45 minutes for lunch, and the agreement says, I think, half an hour, and in sports, I don't have an agreement anymore. So, of course, then if we could, we work it so they'll have the 45 minutes that make up the 15 minutes. Or if they took time off, let's say they had a political meeting someplace, and everybody has to leave the shop, then we have to arrange it with the employer so they make up the time. So, you know, they don't lose pay and he doesn't lose work. And then we take him to the meetings.
Now, when the price committee, for instance, would go in to meet about the prices, would you always be involved in that? Not always.
If they can't settle themselves, then they call the union. And then when you settle the price, then everybody, that's what's supposed to be done. Sign, the committee signs that they agree on the price, and the business agent signs and takes a copy to the office. And if we couldn't settle it, then we take it to the impartial chairman. And he was the last one to decide what it's going to be.
And do you think he was actually impartial?
Sometimes, no, I don't think so, but sometimes he was. But
what side do you think he usually supported?
Well, I always thought he was on the side of the employers, but I don't know, maybe I was prejudiced, I don't know. I remember the first time that I went to sell, this is really something. When I first started as a business agent, I don't know nothing, you know, I'm just like I fell from heaven. But I know that when I worked in the shop, I wanted the price, and the chair lady went to ask for it. So they wanted, I'll never forget, and I even remember the name of the shop. It was a dress shop, but it was in the sportswear local. They were making a two-piece garment, a dress with a coat, and they wanted $3.50, I think, for both. And so I went to them. We couldn't get the price from the employer, know-how. So we went to the impartial chairman. And I didn't know yet how to settle
the price. You represented today?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I went with with the committee, the impartial chairman's office, and they asked me how much I think it's worth. So I told them what the guest told me, you know, and I gave it to girls, which they always thought was terrible, but they said that sometimes I shouldn't do so much for the girls. So anyway, so they told me to break down the price. So we did, and with the help of the chair lady, but never in my mind did I think that the price is going to come up less. So it came much less on the coat, I think. Well, no, much less on the dress. So of course, I wanted $350. Now, the only way I could see it is if they had to pay more on the coat, and the coat had less work on the dress. And that was one mistake, and I learned my lesson. I guess we made a mistake on the dresses because the garment is worth $350. But I knew inside of me that I didn't know things about it. So I went to Mr. Levy and I told him about it. And I said, I really got caught in a blunder today and I didn't know how to get out of it. So he said, what happened? So I told him. He said, well, next time, he says, make sure before that you figure out, you know, everything so you know how to present it. So they will be cut in my wares. And that's the only time that I got in a predicament like that. And the thing that where I got in trouble all the time is that the bosses don't want you to go and talk to the workers, you know, and I look for an excuse. And I find a way to talk to the workers. And I had an employer, his name was, the name of the shop was Arlene, doesn't exist anymore. And he had an awful lot. He had 200-300 people, and most of them were working section work. And I could, anybody in the world that I knew someplace that come begging for a job, I sent him to that shop. And he didn't pay very much. But the girls, and this took me a long time to find out, the girls were crooked themselves. And I couldn't, you know, it's funny, but I couldn't see it but one way. And, you know, one would punch a card for somebody else, and she wasn't even in the shop. Or they'd steal. And they buy, not by one blouse, or maybe by hundreds. And so I couldn't go and tell the girl, why you're a thief, you know. When I found out, I told them in their faces, I'm not in front of the employer. I said, if they fire you, I can't do anything for you. And anyway, he had a temper, something like a lion. And when I first came to the shop, I tell you, I was just shaking. My knees were going like this because I already knew how he was. And of course, he started yelling at me. He, what business they have in his shop, and what do I know about his workers? And he's the boss here, and all kinds of stuff like that. And so he says, you know what I'm going to do? He says, I'm going to throw you down the window. And we were on the 10th floor. And I tell you, I was petrified. But for some reason, I don't know what happened. I just turned around and I smiled and I said, you know, Mr. Nusso, if you throw me down, you know what's going to happen? I don't get killed and you're going to go to jail. Well, that struck him so funny that he started laughing. He thought it was funny. I didn't get excited. I was scared, but he never knew it because he didn't show. My knees were shaking, but that's all. So from that day on, I could go to the shop and he'd joke and he'd get mad at me sometimes. And I let him yell, and after he got through yelling, then I'd say, all right, now, this one is not getting, because see, they were mostly time workers, the learners, you know. And these were the days when they were getting 75 cents an hour, 80 cents an hour. So I went and got raises for them, and I could get a nickel, because just so they got a little bit above the minimum, and you couldn't get any more. Mm-hmm. And so
this would be still the late 30s?
Yeah, that was even later than that, but he still had a system. So finally, they got out of the union by breaking partnership, and one of them bought the hospital, and the other one became a jobber. And anyway, the shop went out of business after 24 years.
Hmm.
And all the people in the shop were supposed to get severance pay, because that's something else when you work in a union shop. For each year that you work in a union shop, the employer has to pay so much. So if the shop goes out of business, they get in a lump sum, they get severance pay in so many weeks, every week while they collect the unemployment, we get them other jobs. And he was the first one that I remember, because not all the people got it. Because it's crazy, but I would tell the people, to come to the union and sign papers so they could get their severance pay. You know that some of them didn't bother. I called 3 meetings and I couldn't get everybody. Some of them never got their severance pay. They didn't bother and I sent them letters and they didn't come. What could I do? So then, of course, some of them, it was a blouse factory, not very expensive, and they scattered all over. A few of them got jobs in other union shops. Mm-hmm. Some of them went to non-union shops. And some of them got been in the union maybe 18 years, and they went to open shops, and I go and ask them, don't be silly, go into a union shop, you're going to lose your pension. Because, you know, they were working for a pension. And they wouldn't, so they lost their pension.
Why do you think they would go into open shops?
Because they couldn't find a shop right away the way they liked it. And so quite a few people lost their, that they would be getting their pensions today because of that.
Hmm.
And then you have no idea how many people don't come after their vacation checks. The piles of checks would be this high that we have a meeting and we call them and we write to them once, but they don't keep on after them. I mean, so they don't come after their vacation check. So after the 1 year, I think it's the limit, then they cancel the check. But they have a right to the check even 10 years later. If they go to the union and ask for their vacation check, they're supposed to give it to them. This is what I have to tell the people. I don't know what other business agents did, because I know that was the right. They were supposed to do it. Then, of course, I worked as a business agent for I don't know how many years. Because I was off and on, you know, doing something else. So they borrowed me at the organization department. And like I told you, or maybe I didn't tell you yet, the men were getting more pay than the women. And by this time, we had another woman organizer. Her name was May Hamilton. And she was a Negro. And she was from the dressmakers. But when the dressmakers and the sportswear joined and became one, you know.
What year was that?
Gee, I don't know. Maybe 15 years or more. I'm guessing. I don't remember. But anyway, they became the joint council. So then, of course, she was a business agent for sportswear and for dresses, and I also got some dresses. She was getting, because her wages weren't high. See, Dubinsky, the president of the union, didn't believe in high wages. He believed that you have to love the union and give everything that you can for the union, but he didn't believe like other unions or later presidents did, where they would raise their wages. So the men were getting, I was getting $75 a week. May Hamilton was getting 70 because she had come in later. The men were getting 75 plus all kinds of extras that I didn't get, which that really burned me up.
Now, this is after, wait, this many years after your fight about not getting the same as that man? Hadn't you had a
fight? Oh, yeah, that was a long time ago. We were only getting $30 or $35 a week. When I came back, I found out that he got his raise.
Right.
So I had sent a letter to the joint council, and I told him, Monday I'm going to a shop where they're going to pay me, not for my sex, but for my work. And
even despite that, as a business agent then, and later you still
wasn't. Yeah, well, so anyway, they did give me a raise then, and I got the same pay as this, but then we were small, you know, we were only 2 business agents. Then later on, they had this work, they had Max Wolf, they had Jack Spindler, and High Milstein. They were organizers, and Max was also helping the office, assistant to the manager and all that. They were all getting more, but the wages supposedly they were getting 75 like me. This was years ago. And then they would get $10 extra for, like Max would get it for going to the impartial chairman's office, or for going to take a worker to the employment office to fight for them. They get extra. And I worked as a business agent and organizer, and I wasn't getting anything extra, you know. And so I asked for more money, and they told me that I wasn't doing what they were doing. And we had one manager, his name was Jan Yulin. By the way, his son is a doctor, and he comes on television.
Arthur
Yulin, well, that was his father. And when Arthur got married, by the way, we had a big party at the union for him. So anyway, Yulin says that they were men and they're entitled to more. But see, so that's another reason why I always thought, you know, when we start talking about women's liberation, I thought, well, now I'm really going to do it myself too. Because what I intended to do, and I wasn't saying anything to them, because I figured I'll wait. And when I retire, when we start to retire, I'll go to the labor board and then tell them that I was being discriminated. I wasn't going to lose my job, you know. So but I waited. But then they had an executive board meeting with the general executive board here. And I happened to be talking to one of the vice presidents the president that resigned. And what's his name? His spirit? Louis Stolberg. I was the next president. I was talking to our vice president, and I told him, I said, you know, the thing that bothers me, I said, I give everything to the union, I said, and they discriminate. I said, I don't get the same wages as the men, and they manage to fix it, you know, so it's all right, but that doesn't help me. And so he says to me, well, Stolberg is very good. He says, why don't you write to Stolberg? And, of course, immediately I wrote Stolberg and I told him, and I didn't mention any names, I just told him that there was two of us women working and we were both getting less pay than the men. And the answer came that he was going to talk to Otto, that's Vice President Otto, and he let me know. Well, you know what Otto wrote to him? I had the letter, but I can't find it. I have it someplace, I don't know where it is, because I have a copy, because he sent me a copy. Where it also tells him that, well, the men were getting more wages because they're business agents and organizers. And I was nothing but a business agent. And it was the opposite, you know. So I didn't get it. And I went to the joint board and I asked for it. And Janulin and Maxwell got wind of it. And when I asked for it, and another thing was wrong with me, when I fight for myself, I would cry. Then I get all emotional, and so instead of getting emotional, I better keep quiet, because I was ashamed to cry and I couldn't help it. So anyway, I told some people and I told them, well, at the joint board, I'm going to ask that I should get the same pay. And will you help me? And I helped most of these people in my favor. But I made a mistake of calling one that I thought was a good friend of mine, and I told him what happened. I said, I wrote to New York, and they told me that. No, first before I went to New York, and I said, I want the same pay as the others are getting. So this man came over and told Max Wolf about it. So when I came in the evening to ask for the extra money, they came and said that if I wanted a raise, I should know better, I should write to New York. I wasn't asking for a raise, I was asking for expenses. Oh, I forgot, because they had borrowed me from the organization department. And in the organization department, they were getting $15 extra a week for the use of the car. Mm. So when Sam Schwartz, which was in the organization department, he went and asked Julian, he wanted me to help him. And I thought, years ago, I was such a good organizer, I figured I'd just come in there and I'll organize like nobody's business. So, which I got fooled. So anyway, he says to me, and you will get your car expenses. So he went to, and I said, okay, I said, if it's only for a short time, but I don't want to be, because see, I knew, as a business agent, you get elected, and they can't fire you unless you do something against the union. And I was not so young, and I've been in the union for many years, and I figured, why should I lose everything? So I said, I'll go for a year, but I want to come back.
So you just took a leave in other words.
Yeah. So anyway, I went in the organization department, and I got my $15 extra, and sometimes when I take people out to eat, you know, we get their voucher and they pay for it. So I was there, and then the election time came, and they had these caucus meetings, you know, and they never called me to a meeting. So I kind of got suspicious. I thought it was so funny that, you know, they're leaving me out of it. So I found out where is the next meeting, and I went to the meeting, and I said, I came to a meeting, and I, like a bombshell, because I always did things like that, out of the clear sky. And I came and I said, I want to come back as a business agent. And Julian looks at me and says, what do you mean you want to come back? He says, we have a new business agent, that means I have to fire her. This was this Negro girl. She wasn't so new, but anyway, she was the last one. And I says, I don't want anybody fired. I said, but I think that I have a right to my job. I said, because I was only borrowed at the organization department. and I want to be on the ballot at the next election. And so, he could stop me, you know. So anyway, I worked in the organization department until the election, and by this time they dissolved the organization department. They didn't do any more organizing for a while. And I went back as a business agent. And when I got my first check, I'm $15 less. So I went to ask him how come my check is smaller. I asked the head organizer. He said, you have to talk to Yulin, he's the manager. So Yulin was on a vacation or someplace on a trip. When he came back, I went to him, and by this time it was 3 weeks or 2 weeks that I didn't get my $15. And I said, what happened? And he said, why? He said, you were getting that when you were an organizer, but you're no longer an organizer. I said, but John, I said, all my life, I said, I've been using my car. I never got paid before, and now I said, you're going to take it away from me? I thought you don't take it away. Or he said, well, if you don't like it, he says, you write to New York. See? And before I wrote to New York, I went to the joint board, and I told them I wanted this $15. But Max Wolf is a very good also talker and can twist things around. And
he was another business agent?
He was an assistant manager.
Ah.
And he had talked to this man, and I had already told this man that I wanted my $15 back and for them to vote for me. So they were all prepared, so they told me, well, she's asking for a raise. Well, she knows that we can't give raises. She has to write to New York because we don't. And I wasn't asking for a raise. I was asking for my car expenses, and I didn't get it. So I wrote to New York. Well, you know, I said, oh, my God, did Julie take a dislike to me? He could fire me the right then and there, he could. But one of the business agents, his name was Holland, he came over to me and says, Anita, you know what you did? You did an unpardonable sin. They'll never forgive you that you went over their head. Because she said, we'll go right to New York, so I did. But I didn't get $15 because Otto said that I was not an organizer but a business agent. And I said, well, I have only a few more years to go, so I'll wait. And when time comes to retire, then I'll take it to the labor board and get at least what I was supposed to get. And this May Hamilton, the same way, she never got what the man was getting. So anyway, Otto finally retired, was forced to retire, and comes this Cornelius Wall. He's the new vice president. Before he came, I mean, he was already here, but he's only the manager, because John Yulin had retired, and he died the following year. So Wall was the manager that when he came and he found out and he saw the discrepancies in wages, he couldn't understand it. How come some people are making so much more than others, and others have been there longer and they're making less? So I went to this Vice President Sims, and he first came here, and I asked him, I said, why don't I get this money? And his answer was, well, he says, it's too soon. He says, I just got here, give me a chance to wet my teeth at least, and then I'll know what to do. Well, he never wet his feet because he didn't make it. Anyway, so finally, we had this other strike, the last strike is when Chiklengere, and after Chiklengere we had the Southern strike. That was my last strike. And Cornelius Wall was the manager, still is manager and vice president. He was really nice to me. So when he read and saw them, he called a meeting of all the joint boards, the clothes, the dresses, and the sportswear. And right in the middle of the meeting, in front of everybody, he says, you know, he says, I find so many things here that are wrong that I can't understand it. He says, some people are getting more money, some people are getting less, and he says, some people are here for years, and they're getting less than anybody else. And then I knew he's talking about me, and I was getting smaller and smaller because I was so embarrassed. I didn't want them to know, the workers. And finally, when he comes out and he says, Anita Cass has been here the longest of anybody, he says, and she's getting the lowest pay. And everybody, those that didn't know me, they turned and looked at me like I was something strange, you know. And so he says, these are the things. And there's other things that happened, I mean, with other people, not with me, you know. Some of them got fired, and some of them had to resign and change jobs and things. So then later on, it was about December, and I don't remember how many months, this was the year before I got sick. So I get my pay one day, and I get $20 more than I used to get. So I thought, gee, I must have made a mistake. So I went to the office and I said, now what's this $20 for? So he told me to go and ask Mr. Wally. They called him Wally. So I went to him. And I said, Wally, I said, what's this? And he said, well, that's your raise that you should have had a long time ago. And I had never asked him, because I figured, what's the use?
Yeah.
I had asked everybody else, and they all turned me down in a different way. So I figured, I'll have a couple more years to go, I'll wait. But when he came and gave me the $20 on his own, so that, I guess, got me on completely on his side, because he was, I thought he was very, how should the word, when you treat everybody equal, there's a word for it.
Asia.
So I figured that's the man that we need here. And then he figured that we have a clique in there. And he was going to try to, but see, he couldn't fire anybody. He had to wait until people either got told enough. And so he told everybody when they were 65, they had to retire. And you should see some of them try to change their age. And oh, he pays the people will go. So anyway, everybody got out that were 65, and there was a Spanish woman from Spain, not Mexican. She was working in the office like a translator, and she was in the credit union, and she sent people jobs. And so whenever the business agent got the raise, she wasn't getting the same wages as the business agent, but every time they got the raise, she got one. But when Wally came, for some reason, when the business agent got the raise, she didn't get it. And she got mad, and she went and she got so mad, and I talked to her, and I said, Mary, don't go. I said, calm down. I said, because if you quit, I said, you'll be out. Because one more before that, a Mexican fellow did the same thing, and he was out. He went to quit, and they accepted his resignation. So I told her, don't do it, Mary. Wait. Nope. So she went and told him that if she doesn't get the raise like the business says, she quit. So he accepted her resignation. And so I was the only one left with the old time.
Well, Anita, was it pretty clear that it was because you were a woman that you were getting less, or because you weren't part of the clique, or was it both?
I think it was both. I think it was both. I mean, originally, you know, when I was in the other, because when I first started, well, even years ago when we first started, remember, women were not getting the same wages anyhow. So that part, it wasn't much different. But in the union, they always talk equality, and we all get the same, and we share, and all that. So, but when it came to, see, they had this, some people are manipulators, you know. And it just happened that these two or three fellows that were there, they were pretty good, and of course, Dubinsky won't give a raise, because the order came from New York when we got the raise. So they managed somehow to get money, like, well, I'm going, like this Max Wolf, was getting $10 a month, or $10 a week, now I don't remember. I can't say for sure whether he was getting $10 a week or $10 a month extra for going to San Bernardino to the shop. And he was getting car expenses also. Now, today was $10. Then he was getting $10 for going to the impartial chairman's office. That made it $20. Then because he went, he also was a delegate when it came anything to do with labor and management, you know, he'd go to Sacramento. He got paid extra for that. So he was getting about $40 more a week in a different way with vouchers. And when I was business agent, I saw one, his name was Norman Bolsky. He was a dressmaker's business agent originally. And I happened to see one day when they turned in vouchers, and he turned in a voucher for $5. So I asked one of the girls, I said, what is that for? And she said, well, because Dubinsky, she says because he goes to shops out of town and he gets extra pay. So I went to Yulin and I turned in a voucher for, I don't know if I turned it for $3.50 or $5. And he started yelling at me, and I made a mistake of saying, well, it's funny. I said, well, I can't get it, but Norman Bolsky gets it. And he looked out the screen, and he said, and it's none of your business. And I said, what do you mean? Well, then he had to realize that he had said the wrong thing. He said, well, what I mean is Dubinsky doesn't want to, because he's a student, came from school, he's not getting the same wages, and he calmed down completely, and he said, and the man has a family, so of course he gets extra. But I could get $5, and of course the girl got help for telling me because they knew who it was. So you have to be even there, you know. And these are the little things that kind of, for some reason I never like to belong to cliques, because maybe I'm just different, I don't know. I just couldn't see it.
Did you feel that you, since you didn't belong to the clique, did you feel you were an outsider? Or were there enough people, other people who weren't part of the clique that you were?
Well, I would say both of us women were outsiders, which is me and I, because I figured that she was Negro and I'm not a Jew, and they were all Jewish. And of course, I wasn't anti-Jewish, but then it came a time when I believed that it was just because they helped themselves. You know, one Jew helps another Jew. Because I know we had a business agent. He drank something off it. And you should see how they covered up for that man. And of course it could be because he's just a man who was somebody's friend, but I always figured to myself, it's because he's Jewish. And finally they had to let him go because they had to bring him in from a shop one time in a taxi, he was so drunk. And I guess there's no way of getting out of that.
But let me just ask you two things and then we'll quit for today. When you were a business agent, how many shops would you be responsible for as a business agent?
Well, it depends. Once upon a time, I had about 32 shops. Then later on, when I started organizing again, they took some of them away because I had too much work organizing, and so I had less shops. And then when I guess they must have noticed that I wasn't feeling good. I myself didn't notice it, but when I came back, no, I don't think that was the reason. When I came back after they borrowed me from the organization department, they only gave me a few shops.
Oh.
And I got mad because they took away all the Spanish-speaking shops from me.
Huh.
And I told them, I said, the idea was that I have those shops because I speak Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
They had given it to this Negro girl, but they had already gotten together, you know, and they had agreed that they just couldn't give me a scary. I think I had 13 shops, little shops, which I should have been tickled to death because there wasn't much work. I was mad as a hornet because they took away all the Spanish speaking, and I said, how come? Oh, because we're not going to do that anymore. We're not going to have a separation of languages, you know. They're doing it again now, but of course at this time, I had just come back from the organization department, and I was one business too many, business agent too many. They didn't know what to do. They couldn't afford, and I told them myself that I didn't want Mary to lose her job. But I wasn't going to lose mine either after so many years, because she only worked altogether 10 years, I think.
Mm.
And when I got sick at the end, she got sick too, and then she tried to go on a permanent disability, and the doctor wouldn't sign for her, and she never came back. But in the meantime, she had opened. Now, see what happened. The one gives everything to the union, he don't care. She goes and opens a cleaning place, and she's been working at it for 6 or 8 months while she's telling them at the union that she's sick. And she was getting paid, and she wasn't working. So finally, when they found out, of course, they let her go.
Mm.
And I think now she collected her, she will have a retirement pay. And after 15 years, she worked 10 years, but she still was entitled to some money. But she was in no hurry to get it.
So you felt that basically they were trying to ease you out by taking away the Spanish-speaking
shops? Either that or that. I don't think they were trying to ease me out because they still want me as an organizer. But they didn't want me to have so much power.
Mm.
Because, see, they figured with the Spanish-speaking people, I had too much power. And I never tried to use it for anything. I mean, like one business agent, his name is Jaime, I think he's retired. So one time he told me, you know, Anita, he says, I wish I was in your place. He said, don't you know you have the union in the palm of your hand?
Was that primarily because you were so popular with the Spanish-speaking?
I did. Well, I was popular with everybody, not only with the Spanish-speaking. The Negroes were crazy about me, and the American girls, I call them American because the Anglos, I should say, because I was friendly with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always helping the other business agents. At first, now, for instance, there was one business agent, his last name was Holland, and he died a long time ago. He resented me at first very much. And I couldn't imagine why, because I was trying to help him. And So one day he told me, because he was very frank, and he told me, he says, Anita, you know what I don't like about you? I'm doing my work and you come in and say, so if they don't know how to speak English, too bad, why don't they learn? And I said, well, I can't stand it. I said, when I can help you, I'm not trying to hurt you, I'm just trying to explain what the woman said. So then later on, every time he got, where he needed a translator or going to a shop, he'd take me along with him to help him. But first he figured out, I don't know what he figured.
Mm. But you were cutting your nose.
Yeah. So, and the others, I always helped them, and they never objected to it. The one that didn't like to be, that one never liked it. That was the Negro girl. She didn't want, and she went even to school to learn Spanish, because she didn't want me or anybody else to you know, go try to help her.
So it sounds like mainly because you were in a really unique position, being a Spanish-speaking organizer and business agent, that they began very often would see you as a threat because you had all those people that would stand behind you.
And when it came to an election, now there's something like this. I guess they do in different unions. And I, like I told you, maybe I'm a little different than other people, I don't know, but I have some ideas and I can't change. I knew that when my name appears on a ballot, I win. Not because I was bragging, because I knew, because everybody was in my favor. So what they decided, there were some business agents who were not popular. You know, for some reason they were not liked. So they make a block, they call it a block. They put all the names in there. So if they vote for me, they voted for everybody. Oh. And I fought that thing, and I fought it, and I didn't want it that way. I want my name separate. And then they call me in the office and say, well, don't be selfish. This way we won't have any trouble. So I finally gave in, and so everybody would get to be elected, see. And because, like, if you're going to a convention, if my name appeared on the ballot, they were sure I was going to win. So they talked me out of it. Now, for instance, they talked me out of the last convention. And they didn't talk me out. They cheated me out of it. Exactly, they cheated me. And that's one of the reasons sometimes I think I got a heart attack. The first one, anyway. I was supposed to... See, we had it years before. We had established, like, a custom that business agent, one business agent goes this time, the next time with somebody else. And then if somebody's retired, you give a chance to that business agent to go to the last convention. Well, I was going to retire the following year. So my name was in every local. You know, they had nominated me for the convention. So they asked me, and I went to shops, even that were not mine, and I talked to people and told them, be sure to vote for me, because this is permissible after, just before election time, you can go and try to get votes. So even the day before we had this meeting, I went to shop and I announced it over the loudspeaker. And I said, don't forget, I said, I want to go to a convention. I said, so don't forget to come and vote. And then we had a meeting. They called every candidate in and they asked them what they want. So I told them I don't want to be a business agent anymore, because he was my last year and I had this other girl, Gloria Feliciano. I wanted her to take my place because I wanted a Spanish-speaking woman in there. And so I figured I'll give her my job. And so I said, I don't want to be a business agent anymore. The only thing I want to go to the convention. That I don't give up. So the night that they were going to decide who's going to the convention, the head organizer says to me, Anita, we have a banquet in Corona. And some organization, some unions, I don't know who they were. And she says, we have to go. So, of course, I was so sure, you know, I had so many friends, and I said, well, I have to go. So I told this one that called me just a while back, it's one of them. And I said, be sure, I said, when they bring out the names of the people for the convention, be sure to tell them that I want to go. And I went to the banquet. The next day, I got a call from a man, a pastor, his name was John Anselm. He says, Anita, he says, I can't understand you. He says, you wanted to go to the convention so bad. And all at once, they announced it last night that you don't want to go anyplace. And I said, you're crazy. I said, I've never said such a thing. He said, why weren't you at the meeting? I said, I was in Corona. They sent me to Corona to a banquet. I went to quite a few organizers. And so you know how they announced it? That I had renounced that I didn't want to be a business agent anymore. I didn't want anything anymore because next year was going to be my last year. and I wasn't going to work anymore, so I didn't want to go to the convention or any place. So the people that were supposed to nominate me or make sure that I get nominated, they all look at each other, and of course I wasn't there, and they figure it's true. So they said, well, if you don't want it, then we kept quiet. So when I come to work and I find out that I'm not, oh God, you know, I must have had a heart attack on the other side.